Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Virginia Lopez, a Caracas-based journalist who covers Latin America and Venezuela for The Guardian of the United Kingdom and Sky TV. Welcome to Background Briefing, Virginia Lopez.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Well, and you've been taking some risks there covering La Plata prison, where there's been, for the last 11 days, there have been, it sounds almost like a war going on there. Tell us about what's happening.
Well, the first official report to come out said that close to 150 inmates had escaped via a tunnel. But then some official reports said that it had actually been close to 600 over a four-month period, partly due to the fact that there has been no custodian in this jail for at least 4 or 5 months. But the truth is that the jail is completely overcrowded. It has a capacity for about 250 men, and it is now housing close to 2,500. So you see, it's chaotic all over.
But my understanding is that the prisoners have been fighting the National Guard, and they're using heavy military-style weapons. So you spent time inside the prison doing a report for Sky TV. Tell us about what goes on there and how autonomous the prisoners are and what kind of weaponry they have.
There was a transformation inside the jails about 4 or 5 years ago that came about led by the inmates. It wasn't a government-led initiative. And basically what they did is that they turned jails into like these sort of leaner and meaner machines, where all sorts of extortion and kidnappings take place from within, outside. The last time that there was a prison siege, like a big notorious one, was actually close to a year ago in El Rodeo. And one of the things that became evident from that, and that I saw also when I went inside one of these jails for the Sky TV documentary, is that inmates have complete control over the jail. They're heavily armed with war or weaponry that they buy from the National Guard. Completely overcrowded. It's on one hand, you know, a complete case of violation of human rights. And on the other, it's, like I said, it's organized crime at its best, with complete impunity, because partly they're already in jail. Nobody's going to go inside. And also because, like I said before, they run the jail.
So the reason we're talking about this, obviously I want to talk about President Chavez's health. It's been exactly 1 year since he went on national television and canceled a trip to Brazil and said that he had a debilitating pain in his knee. So it's been a year since Chavez has gone public, although he's been very secretive about it, and we'll talk about that in a bit. The reason I brought up the prison, Virginia Lopez, in Caracas is that my understanding is that that's the biggest problem for citizens of Venezuela, is that it's becoming an incredibly lawless state.
Yes, it's not. Yeah, there's more and more pockets where the state seems to have ceased functioning, and the citizens are moving into occupy the vacuum. And the jail is certainly one of these. They operate in almost like state-like structure. In fact, the prison leader they call the whole way that he operates the jail the government. So then actually whenever he's deposed in sort of jail lingo, they refer to it as a change in government. He extols taxes from the citizens, and which are, you know, from the inmates who are also called citizens in like local jail lingo. You're absolutely right. They operate like parallel states.
But there's a broader problem is that it seems that Hugo Chavez is in denial about how dangerous his country's become for ordinary citizens. I think, you know, he's obviously interested in revolutionary rhetoric and perhaps not dealing with the reality. And the long and the short of it is, if you have this kind of anarchy inside the prisons, no succession to a man that looks like he's dying of cancer, isn't there a recipe here for a great deal of social unrest? If the prisons themselves are already hotbeds of anarchy, and at any point thousands of prisoners could walk off with their heavy weapons, I'm just getting a picture here of a country that could descend into violence.
Absolutely. You're completely right. It's quite grim. I mean, as it is, Venezuela is already one of the most dangerous countries in the world. Caracas is certainly, I think it's ranked number three as the most dangerous city in Latin America or the world. And we do live a complete state of fear. In a sort of almost typical way, most of the crimes get trailed back to somebody in the police or in the military. So yes, it's a complete recipe for disaster. And additionally, yes, you have a population of close to 40,000 men who are heavily armed with, like we said, you know, war-grade weaponry that could very easily walk out of the 33, 34 jails in the country. They actually have this system whereby they're interconnected, and they can reach agreements within each other, you know, with each other. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it'd be dire to think of it. I think we're all in a bit of a denial because it'd just be disastrous.
But in terms of you as a Venezuelan citizen, Virginia Lopez, again, Caracas-based journalist who covers Latin America and Venezuela for The Guardian of the United Kingdom and Sky TV, in terms of threats to your personal security and citizens of Venezuela, what's the demographic that threatens you? Who are the people responsible for the highest crime rate in the world?
Well, there's obviously no, you know, official information coming out, and it's all sort of based on, like, you know, random reports that you know, that seep or that trickle. But usually the way that these things seem to operate is that they're quite skilled on one hand. So you know, there's the suspicion that they're ex-policemen or currently policemen, and also, like I said earlier on, there's certainly an element of the National Guard selling off weapons to the inmates, and the jails operating, you know, the jails are quite porous, and there's been cases in which people have been kidnapped, and then when the relatives receive the ransom call, the call gets tracked to within one of these jails. So they're operating, you know, within and without, jail walls.
I see. But I take it that there's also a lot of kind of dumb random crime, you know, guys getting drunk and shooting each other. I mean, there's a lot of, that's my
understanding. Yeah, there's been an escalation, but you're right. Yeah, usually most of the crime occurs within, you know, statistically speaking, from Thursday night till about Saturday night, Sunday morning, which is when, you know, people are off partying. A lot of these deaths, if not most of them, also occur in the poor neighborhoods among men between the ages of 17 and 24. That's the primary sector of the population that are the victims of crime. And, of course, it's quite sad because President Chavez has always, you know, talked about the revolution being a process that would benefit the poor, and you're seeing that on one hand, they're the victims of this chaos, and they're the victims of violence and alcohol, really.
So let's talk again, Virginia Lopez, Caracas-based journalist who covers Latin America and Venezuela for The Guardian of the UK and Sky TV. It's been a year exactly to the day that Chavez went on Venezuelan state television to say he was cancelling his trip to Brazil because of pain in his knee. And subsequent to that, he's gone to Cuba throughout most of 2011 for both chemotherapy and now for radiation treatment, and he was supposed to come back today, wasn't he, to Venezuela?
He's supposed to arrive today. We don't know the exact hour, but an ex-minister, Jesse Chacon, did go on TV earlier this morning saying that President Chavez had to extend his radiotherapy treatment. So, again, we're up in the air as to whether he might do a surprise return tonight, or whether, you know, he'll have to extend his stay in Cuba for health reasons.
But just a month ago, on April the 6th, during a mass in his home state of Barinas, Chavez teared up and discussed his struggle with cancer and said, "Christ, give me life, because I still have things to do for the people of this country. Do not take me yet." And the number of Venezuelan journalists, particularly Nelson Bacaranda, have suggested that he's terminally ill. Is that just speculation? I mean, it sounds to me, after all of this treatment, that something is deeply wrong here.
It's speculation in that the government hasn't come out with an official position, and it's speculation in that there have been no official medical record released, which is what makes this situation so debilitating nationwide, really, because, you know, we are all working on speculation and gossip. It's really quite annoying, not only as a journalist, but as a citizen, because, you know, the future of the country depends on somebody coming out clean and, you know, saying what it is he has and the amount of time that he has to live.
Well, he's just this week named 10 Venezuelans to a new Council of State, which is stipulated by the Constitution in terms of successors. And that suggests, at least, because there was a lot of concern that he had made no succession plans. It sounds like he's finally making some succession plans or putting a mechanism in place.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of a cabinet shuffle since the beginning of the year. And the latest was this Council of State, which is, according to the Constitution, supposed to only serve to give advice to the government. But then the other thing that's going on right now is that Chavez has asked the National Assembly and has suggested that that Venezuela leave the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights. And this Council of State would also be working jointly in you know, advising whoever it is that is in charge of that move. So yeah, we are living in a very strange country at a very weird time. It's nobody quite knows what's going on. Everybody speculates. Everybody has a theory, and the government, you know, basically won't put us out of our misery, so to speak.
So tell me about the local reaction to Hugo Chavez's foreign policy. I mean, some of the worst dictators in the world are friends of Venezuela's leader, Hugo Chavez, and he has come to the aid of the Assad clan in Syria, who are murdering their own people in the most brutal and disgraceful way. And he's basically keeping that regime alive with shipments of oil, Chavez is. And, of course, he defends his friend Ahmadinejad when he was beating up his people and suppressing the Green Revolution a couple of years ago. So a lot of American leftists are in denial. They think he's a revolutionary hero like they believe Castro is as well. But how's it playing in Venezuela itself? Because I understand there's a expatriate Syrian and Lebanese community in both in Central and South America and in Venezuela.
Yes, the Syrian expat community in Venezuela, which is quite large and also quite powerful economically, protested heavily the declaration about 2 months ago of Venezuela's oil minister that he would continue to ship oil to Syria as long as Syria needed it. There were protests not only in Caracas, which is the capital, but also in Valencia, which is one of the largest cities here as well. Venezuelans are divided when it comes to Chavez. There's a staunch support of anything he does on one hand, and then there's also a staunch opposition about anything he does. But in this case, it was particularly telling that it was the Syrians themselves protesting against, you know, the support that was being shown to Assad, because, you know, clearly they're in disagreement.
So tell me then about the political opposition there. It's an election year, and the Venezuelan presidential elections are a month before the U.S. presidential elections, I think October the 7th, isn't it?
Yes.
And we don't even know whether Hugo Chavez is going to be alive, and he's certainly not campaigning, and he's not telling the Venezuelan people anything about his health. The only people who know about what's really happening are the Castro brothers and Cuban intelligence. But there is an opposition candidate that's been chosen, and my understanding is he's, in American terms, he's kind of he makes Al Gore and Mitt Romney look like they're charismatic.
It's difficult to compete against Chavez because Chavez has been, you know, the ultimate charismatic leader, I would say, even regionally. But having said that, Enrique Capriles has never lost an election. He's currently, or he was governor of Miranda, which is the most populous state in Venezuela. And this is a governorship that he won against Chavez's right-hand man at the moment. So he's a peculiar man, and I, you know, I have all the respect for him because he's been up to this point quite, you know, courageous in a lot of ways. Whenever he goes out in a campaign trail, he oftentimes gets, you know, attacked by Chavez supporters, but, you know, he's doing this sort of like home by home campaign where he's visiting, basically, you know, having face to face contact with people. So yes, like I said, you know, it's I wouldn't want to be in his place having to compete with Chavez. Chavez is, you know, we've seen him; he's a great showman. But also to Gabriel's credit, like I said, he keeps on surprising people in the last primary election. The estimates were going to be that 1 million people were going to go out and vote, and the turnout was about 3,500,000 people, and he won the primaries with close to 3 million votes. So again, you know, he's a surprise. I don't know what else to say.
Well, but you say that he can't compete with Chavez in terms of charisma. But if you're in a country with no physical security for its citizens, it's a dangerous country, how is he campaigning?
Well, I think, you know, what his strategy up to this point has been to go at the smaller level and visit people, basically go, the whole sort of campaign is to go home by home, so one home at a time, and basically listen to what people are saying, and have this very sort of close face-to-face contact with as many people as he can.
So he's obviously, I mean, my understanding is that he's kind of awkward and kind of bumbling, and he's the antithesis of Chavez. Could that work with the people, perhaps people that are tired of the revolutionary comandante?
I wouldn't say he's so awkward, like I said, it's just that Chavez is so overwhelmingly popular and charismatic and has just that really special ability to engage with people that you know, I think even Bill Clinton, it would be hard for him to compete against Chavez on a sort of charisma level. Enrique Capriles has, I think he's been improving, but again, it's, you know, Chavez has to compete with cancer. Rather than with Capriles, it seems at this point, you know.
Sure.
And Capriles is young. He's, you know, out there, you know, going all across the country, very much like, you know, Chavez would probably be doing if he weren't ill. But the truth is that he is ill, and it seems from his latest TV appearances that he's, you know, he's in quite a bit of pain. Again, this is me speculating because we don't have any official medical records.
Well, just in closing, Virginia Lopez. Tell us about the politics of the likely opposition leader who may well be the next president if he doesn't get elected by default. If Chavez dies, which is increasingly likely, does he represent the old guard? Because you know, there's nothing good to be said about the people who've run Venezuela for the last many decades until Chavez came along. The reason that Chavez is popular is that it was run by a kind of oligarchy that plundered the country, right?
Yes. Well, Capriles, as a governor, has been investing a lot of his energy in education. That seems to be sort of his, like, pilot, project. I think he hasn't been accused of terrible corruption charges, which seems to be one of the ills that affects Venezuela constantly. It is also, you know, currently, I think it's, like, the big elephant in the living room. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it's a huge problem that is also affecting us. It's hard to predict. You know, when Chavez came to power, you know, I think he enjoyed something like 70% of the popularity, and nobody would have thought that, it was going to turn to be what it is these days. Venezuela has had the highest income from oil revenue in its history. We should look like Dubai, you know, walking the streets of Caracas, and it doesn't. It's complete chaos. There's been no investment in infrastructure in decades. So, I don't know. I don't want to say that Capriles is going to be excellent. I don't know. I don't have any guarantee of that. He's said of himself that he wants to be sort of like a Venezuelan version of Lula, meaning that he's going to blend sort of like a more responsible brand of socialism. He's also said he's not going to eliminate Chavez's misiones, which are that social programs that are so popular. But again, you know, who knows? Who knows what happens once they get into power? And, you know, unfortunately, we do have a tradition of very presidentialist regimes that where there aren't very many checks and balances, and, you know, presidents tend to sort of take over all of the other powers.
But just in closing, though, can Chavez brand him as a part of the old discredited elite? He refers to him as the people who take their orders from Miami.
He's quite interesting. He and the political party that he belongs to are sort of this brand of like young Venezuelan men. So they're not necessarily tied to the old guard. They're sort of, I would say, like the third way. Mainly because they're young men, they don't have ties to the previous administration, and if they did, they've distanced themselves shortly after, you know, coming into government. And Enrique Capriles, again, is quite interesting. He's been in a political post in one way or another for the past maybe 12 years. Either because he was a mayor of a large municipality in Caracas, or now that he's governor. So he's had experience in power or in government. And like I said, you know, he belongs to this group of young men that have distanced themselves from either Chavismo or the other Adecope form of governance.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Virginia Lopez.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Virginia Lopez, a Caracas-based journalist who covers Latin America and Venezuela for The Guardian of the United Kingdom and Sky TV. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking with the designer of the A-10 and the F-16 about the disastrous F-22 Raptor.
Matilda, Matilda, she take me money and run and leave me.